But now, the International Space Station has been inhabited for a decade, and it's allowed us to undertake research that would formerly have never been possible. I spoke to Kelly Humphreys from NASA's Johnson Space Center.
The International Space Station celebrated its 10th anniversary of human habitation on November 2 of this year. When they crossed that anniversary mark, they had traveled 1.5 billion miles in its travels around the Earth, which equals about 8 round trips to our sun. One of the biggest things that we have learned is how to have humans from different countries, different cultures, different engineering backgrounds work together to help one another out. We are learning a lot about how the human body functions over long duration periods in space, a lot about how to build a very complicated, probably the most complicated vehicle ever attempted in history in orbit. And we are accomplishing a lot of very interesting research and technology development along the way.
Now, obviously, no one astronaut has spent 10 years on the station. How long do they spend each when they go up?
Each astronaut crew spends roughly around 6 months, depending on the vehicles that are going up and coming down and the exact timing there. But the normal stay for a space station expedition crew member is about 6 months.
Could you give us an idea of what life is actually like on board? What sort of conditions do they live in, and how often do they get to speak to their family, for example?
Well, you know, it's changed a lot over the years in that as we first started building the space station, it was a lot smaller. We just had a couple of modules and very little space on board. But now it's about the size of a 5-bedroom home. It's got 2 bathrooms. It's got the ultimate gym that allows the astronauts and cosmonauts to work out and stay fit. And it has probably the best bay window in the universe, a 360-degree cupola that overlooks the Earth below. So it's a lot of that is day-to-day activities, the same kinds of things we do here today. Everybody has to eat and drink, and they have to get up and go to work. And they have to have time to talk with friends and family on the ground. In addition to regular communications we have for operational purposes, which are primarily radio-style communications that go either through satellites that are at geosynchronous orbit or through ground stations, we also have the ability to send and receive email with the crew members, transfer large files back and forth. They get the newspaper sent up to them every morning so they can keep in touch. They have an IP phone on board so that they can call down to anybody they want to on the Earth. And let me tell you, it's a big thrill to get a call from somebody on the space station at any time. I've had the pleasure a couple of times, and it's really neat. They also have an onboard internet capability. It's kind of slow, more like the old 300 to 1400 baud style communications. Those of us who are old enough to remember that had when you were using modems, but they are actually able to interact directly with the internet. And the slowness is a byproduct of the security measures we have to keep to make sure that no viruses get on board.
So it really is almost like being at home, but obviously you're out in orbit. You've mentioned that we've been observing and researching the physiological impact. What impact does it actually have on the body to be in orbit for 6 months?
Well, I'm going to vastly simplify this. There are a lot of different impacts. But some of the chief things that we struggle with is trying to make sure that we don't have bone and muscle density loss. Your body, when it does not have gravity pulling down on it, tends to atrophy, especially your lower limbs, your legs, your feet and legs. And so what we do is try to do countermeasures in which we have various pieces of exercise equipment on board. We have stationary bicycles. We have treadmills that pull you down with bungee cords so that you try to approximate one gravity on your footfall, which is what we're learning really makes a difference in whether or not you have bone density loss, which is serious, similar to what folks on Earth that get osteoporosis deal with. Muscle density loss, we combat that with rigorous exercise on what we call the advanced resistive exercise device, which is essentially a set of stretchable cables, and those allow them to mimic the effects of weightlifting even in the absence of gravity that would allow you to do that for real.
So obviously understanding how life copes with that environment is very important, but it's not just human life that's been looked at. There have been some very interesting experiments on plants. How's the ISS helped with that?
You know, we're looking at a variety of different things on plants. There's an experiment up there right now that is looking at the relative importance of the proximity of water and the need for gravity and how roots develop. This new experiment is looking at the relative importance of those two inputs to the plants and how they grow. In addition, we're doing some work with things that could help us in the area of green technology. There's a plant called Jatropha that is and produces an oily bean as a fruit. It's very prevalent in Florida, and we have sent samples of that up there to see if there's anything we can do through weightlessness to identify how we might be able to improve the fruit-bearing qualities of the plant, because it doesn't bear as much fruit as would be helpful in terms of using that plant seeds or nuts to develop alternative fuels. And so we're looking at things like that as well.
Clearly, for 10 years, it's been invaluable to our scientific knowledge, to our research, to our understanding. What do we expect to see in, say, the next 10 years?
Well, you know, some of the things that I have to preface this with the fact that we are only now really beginning the full utilization of the space station. The first decade has been marked with a focus on completing the assembly of the space station and science being able to be conducted in our off time. We're now, once we are about to go to the assembly complete level, we'll be able to begin the full utilization of the station, which will get us up to about 8 hours a day of scientific research on any given day. We're up to a crew of six, so we've got enough people that can maintain the station, take care of all of the day-to-day activities that we're able to devote more time and effort to science. We just got the last laboratory facilities delivered to the space station on the most recent space shuttle mission, and so we have a full complement of those facilities. We, at this point, have made some very interesting discoveries. A couple I'll pull out for you is the idea of microencapsulation of drugs. There was an experiment done. It was hypothesized on the ground that you could make these microencapsulation things that would allow you to deliver drugs to more precisely to their targets. Everybody's familiar with chemotherapy for a variety of different cancers. One of the problems with chemotherapy is that when you deliver the chemotherapy, you're delivering it to all the cells in the body, not just the cancerous cells. These microballoons, as they're called, can allow you to deliver the cancer treatments directly to the cells that are affected. In this particular case, it was cancer of the prostate that was done, and they had some good success with that. Another very interesting finding was that as some bacteria go into orbit, they become actually more virulent or more disease-causing. We took Salmonella up, and they determined the gene that was responsible for turning on and off this additional virulence, and it's similar to what turns it on and off when it gets into your intestines. And there is actually a vaccine now that is getting ready for clinical testing in humans for Salmonella, which is essentially food poisoning. So those are a couple of early successes we've had, and we look forward to more successes along those lines. And the other thing about it is that it's all about the unknown unknowns. There's a lot of serendipity involved, and when scientists go up there and do their experiments, they find things they did not expect. The unique capability of the space station is that when scientists find something they didn't expect, they can refly new samples, redo their experiment very quickly, and be able to enhance the experiment, refine the details of what they're looking for, and come back with more quickly.
Just lastly, we've obviously learned a lot and are learning a lot about humans, about life in orbit, and about how we cope with those conditions. But can we also use the space station to probe the universe itself? Can we do more astronomy there?
Well, as a matter of fact, on the space shuttle mission that's currently scheduled to go up in February, we're going to be taking the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer. which is developed by Samuel Ting from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And we're going to install that on the exterior of the space station and begin looking for dark matter, which is considered to be one of the most prevalent substances in the universe, but it's very hard to track. And we've been working with scientists around the world to develop a very sensitive instrument that's capable of running for a decade to really try to get a good handle on exactly how much dark matter is in the universe and how it affects the matter that we're all familiar with in the universe. So in that respect, the space station is getting ready to become a very powerful astronomy tool.
NASA's Kelly Humphreys explaining how the ISS has been inhabited for 10 years and is now moving forward into a new phase of its life as a powerful astronomy tool.
Just the idea of having salmonella in space just sounds, oh my God, that could, you can't think of anything worse, can you?
Certainly bad enough down here with gravity, let alone being trapped in a small metal can above the Earth with horrendous food poisoning.
Yes. And no privacy whatsoever.
Of course, it would be terrible.